It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
And now it's time for the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show with Score Morning Show co-host Mully from the Mully and Haw Show, Bears long snapping iron man Patrick Manley, and Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers online sportsbook app today.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to a brand new year of Bears football. And the calendar turns and everything's different, and throw out the records when these two teams meet. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning. Happy New Year. Let's do the new year. Let's go 2-0 Bears for the 2023 to get started. How about that?
Oh, that would be a strong start to the calendar year.
I don't think it's going to happen, but it's always for hoping, right? It's a new year. You can always say that.
You give us something to look forward to.
You know, we're in the midst here of the eight-game losing streak, and I really believe that we have reached the point where there is no reason to win. Where draft position is the most important thing, where, you know, 8 weeks ago, I would have wanted to argue that. The idea of losing out for a couple of months, 2.5 months, that did not appeal to me at all. But now that we are at this point where, frankly, the number one overall pick is kind of in the wheelhouse, I am not going to argue with the crowd that wants to lose, because I think that there's not much to gain at this point in the season. I get it. I understand all the code talk of, well, we want to look at guys. Okay, sure you do. They've lost a lot of players. They had a limited amount of talent to begin with, and now the benefits of losing are significantly more attractive over the last 2 weeks of the season than they might be earlier in the year when you know you've got all that time in front of you and you're trying to keep everyone interested. I would argue that we really have hit that point where it's hard for anyone to really want success. I get it. The coaches aren't out there trying to lose. Players want to win. You know, that's the point of the exercise. But I think that there are other concerns.
No, I understand that, but I'm going to put my helmet back on. And you got to win. They got to win one of these two games just to kind of all this hard work, the new coaching staff, everything that's been put in with the Hitz principle, the standard he's setting, the culture he's trying to set. You've got to win one of these games. And I understand the draft position, all that, but I just think for the sanity of that locker room and that coaching staff and that organization, you've got to win one. And I understand trying to lose out and trying to get the number one pick, but I just got to put my helmet back on, and you've got to win one. You've got to win one.
I think that the locker room, the culture, the mentality of the guys in the locker room, and certainly the energy they're playing with, I've been extremely impressed with them being able to kind of maintain that competitive temperament, maintain positivity. So I think even in the midst of the eight-game losing streak, and frankly, if they do lose the last two, it feels to me like the locker room itself has and would continue to stay intact pretty well. I think there's kind of a variety of reasons for that. I would present the case, Mully, that it would depend, you know, because losing out, yep, and potentially getting the number one overall pick, I definitely see the benefit to that for next season and beyond. But there is a scenario where winning a game, perhaps winning even both these games, can still be viewed as beneficial, because if you end up in a scenario where, you know, we saw Velus Jones have, like, by Velus Jones standards, a yes, bounce back game last week as a returner, right, some nice grabs as a receiver, what if you see continued growth from Velus Jones over these last couple of games, where there's some great connection between he and Justin Fields that leads to a win? You know, that's a very good thing when we're looking towards the development of the entire roster for next year. What if you know, Travis Gibson or Dominique Robinson, what if they're starting to strip sack the QB and you get defensive touchdowns because they've, you know, emerged into some playmakers that help lead you to a victory? There's scenarios here where, as you see guys who you do hope will be a part of this thing moving forward, that you say, if those individuals make winning plays, Chase Claypool has a game-winning touchdown grab in a game where he's got 10 catches, 150 yards, and a couple of tugs. There's scenarios where you say, you know what, that actually could even outweigh the importance of that additional draft slot that you lose by ended up, you know, winning a game here, because you said, you know what, that guy can be something that we pair with the QB or something on defense that shows it has the potential to really be a part of winning.
That's interesting. I just think that the year turns. I think that things change. And you've gotten to a point now where there's very little to play for. And you know, you can argue that, well, if you want to be Detroit, and again, this is where the bar is set. Now, you know, we started out thinking they could be the Eagles. Now I'm reading stuff this week about how, hey, they could turn it around like Detroit did. I'm not overwhelmed by Detroit. I think that they're ahead of the Bears in their rebuild. Mm-hmm. So when you start talking about where the Bears fit into the division, these are, you know, they're dead last, and they've been dead last for a while now, right? They do not look like the team that is ready to take the next step. They got $110 million to spend, and they'll have a high draft pick, which presumably you could trade down and take. But part of the argument about becoming the Lions would be staying in the slot and grabbing a player that, you know, a defensive player that would turn your fortune. If you believe that a Will Anderson had Hall of Fame potential, then maybe you don't trade. The problem is you just need so much that I don't even know we can legitimately have an argument about, you know, a Carter or Anderson or trading down. They just need a lot. And that, frankly, that second-round pick is long gone. And Chase Claypool, I'd like to see him play well just so you don't feel like that was an error.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I want to go back to what we were talking about there at the beginning. I want to bring this all back to like week one and two when we started this season chatter, right? We talked about the growth of this team. We talked about, would they win games at the end of the year? Because with all these young guys on this team, and Anthony, you're talking about those guys that – would you want to see Velus Jones grow and get better? I want to see them do that. I really do, because that's what we wanted to see at the beginning of this year. We understood they weren't going to win a lot of games. We understand that they weren't going to go to the playoffs and all that, but I want to see some development continue through these last two games and them reap the benefits of that development with Justin Fields maybe winning a game in the fourth quarter on a fourth quarter drive. That's what I want to see. I really want to see that in the next 2 weeks. Because I do think that goes a long way for this team in the offseason. These young guys need to understand what winning feels like, what going to the offseason feels like, to know that they have a chance to be better next year and become a pretty good team down the road with all the opportunities they have this offseason with Ryan Poles and the draft picks and all that draft capital you're talking about, Mully.
And the true tangible evidence associated with that is it's important. You know, I mean, it's one thing for all of us to feel confident that Justin Fields is the guy moving forward. He's going to continue to grow and develop, and we're really excited to see what happens when he's surrounded by more talent. But as I continue to remind people, there's not going to be 52 new people around Justin Fields, and so the guys who are currently on the roster, you need as many of them to emerge as individuals who can perform at a level that you think can lead to wins, or perhaps even legitimately does lead to a win. And you say, okay, all right, that's a guy who can play winning football. Maybe we're good there. Maybe we can move on to some other slots and fill in some other holes. And we got so many holes, to your point, Melody, to be filled in, that if anyone emerges where you say that's at least somewhere we don't need to upgrade. I think everywhere virtually could stand an upgrade, but where do we least need an upgrade? Where's an upgrade required for us to start really trying to win games next season? And those spots have to be able to show themselves at some point here, or it's just everywhere. It's just virtually every single slot is where you say we have an opportunity to, we need something that can help lead to wins if wins don't end up coming. Now, how drastically does that change by the end of this season, over the final two games. I think, you know, your point is a valid one, Mully, that ship kind of sailed to a certain extent. But for individuals who take the field, like, you know, frankly, if David Montgomery goes off over the last couple of games, I don't know that it drastically changes my perception of David Montgomery, because he's got a pretty broad body of work here as a Chicago Bear. I think he's a good football. I think he's an excellent football player. Is he an elite running back? No, he's not a touchdown waiting to happen, and I think we've seen that throughout his career. Perhaps to some extent, Cole Kmet, I would put in a similar category. Guys who are a good football player who I believe should continue to be around. But I think there's individuals who are still young enough in their development where I say, okay, if they could potentially really show something here that I think excites enough, and if it leads to a win, because we see that emergence, like Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, the way, especially Kyler Gordon here the last couple of weeks, if he does something like, you know, whatever, a game-winning pick six or something like that. I think all those things can be really positive signs that end up in a win, but in a way you look at that and say, you know what, there's something about that individual guy helping us win a game that's maybe even more important than that draft slot we may lose.
Mm-hmm. And I think that you're absolutely right that when we look, you know, you don't turn over. Well, they turned over a lot of players last year. You know, but I would imagine that there will be about 30 of these guys that, and I'm that's a minimum
that seems fair
to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About 30 players that will be back for another bite at that apple. And, you know, I believe, is it 18? How many rookies have they used this year? A lot. And they still haven't, you know, they want to get to Jatari Carter if that can ever happen. So possibly against Minnesota. I just think that when we start looking at the amount of money they have and the picks that they have, and we don't know how many they're going to accrue, there is a process to the offseason, and it starts with team president, right? We know Ted Phillips is retiring, and the word this week is that Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, is a guy that is a candidate for this job and that they would like for this job. That's kind of the process. You got to get the Bears are, there is so much possibility for the Bears in terms of the sort of, you know, China, if you will, the sleeping giant that could be awakened. There's so much potential, so much earning potential with the franchise, which presumably would then put money back into player procurement. And you would have even better things going on with this team as you're building forward. But it starts with minimizing that. You know, Anthony, you know him. He's the Big Ten commissioner. You've been around a long time. I'd be curious, how well do you know him? What do you think of him?
Kevin Warren's a guy, in the short time that he's been running the Big Ten Conference, he's seen both ends of the perception spectrum in a really brief amount of time. When he first took over, you know, a couple of months into his job, his tenure as Big Ten commissioner, the world shuts down because of COVID, and he became pretty quickly the main punching bag, the main pincushion, kind of the face of the COVID shutdown, certainly from a sports perspective. That was Kevin Warren, and you know, a lot of folks were obviously extremely highly upset by it, and he weathered that, and he was able to be that forward facing sort of individual for it, and in a similar capacity to what senior executives around the NFL, certainly NFL commissioner, has to be that forward-facing pincushion for a lot of decisions that aren't only, you know, within their purview. You know, you as a commissioner, you have to answer to all your other constituents and then just sort of present the groupthink, basically. But it's not like Roger Goodell is in his office at the National Football League headquarters and just, you know, pulling all these strings on his own. He's got 32 different NFL owners who say, here's what we'd like, here's our goal, here's the sanctions we think should be here or there. And then, you know, he kind of just, you know, helps to sort of guide it and organize everything. And Kevin Warren had to do that as Big Ten commissioner, answering to presidents and chancellors around the Big Ten Conference. In the end, the fact that he was able to navigate that, that public heat that came from shutting down the Big Ten football season and bringing it back later on. And, you know, his demeanor throughout that entire time was very calm, very serene, cerebral, methodical is one of his favorite words that he uses, because he tries not to be too rash in his decision making. And the fact that he's been able to to be in that position where he was only a couple of months into the job. And whether you agree with it or not, and some folks like myself did agree with a cautious approach there. There's obviously a lot of other folks who didn't. Regardless of that, it was an immensely difficult decision to make. And it was a decision that he knew and that the Big Ten knew would take a whole lot of heat, that folks would be highly upset about pulling the most lucrative conference, most lucrative college football season out from under them. And he was willing to make that call. And so it's someone who has made big decisions, crucial decisions on international stages. And to have that type of experience in-house, and then you see the way that his image, that the Big Ten has been able to recover since then, and now even enhancing the coffers of the conference, the most lucrative television deal, media rights deal that anyone has ever seen before, and adding USC and UCLA from the Pac-12, bringing the LA market into it, using the NFL model to be able to negotiate this broadcast deal that brought in so much money to the league, to the conference, negotiating with student athletes about their compensation, being willing to have those discussions and try to help lead the sport, not just his conference, but the entire sport, into what the future of intercollegiate athletics look like it's going to be from a compensation perspective. And then you look back at his Vikings resume, and there's a big reason that, you know, that Minnesota was disappointed to see him go, where he helped negotiate or helped to, you know, put in place the systems that built their U.S. Bank Stadium, and how most people think it's a beautiful venue. There's just a lot on his resume that it would seem like it would be a home run hire for the Bears. My big question is, I don't know, it feels like it could be perceived as a step down. So my best guesstimate from what I've known about him and my interactions with him is that it could just be a quality of life thing. You know, maybe he's always been in the NFL as a professional for the most part, and just all these other plates you have to spin as a conference commissioner, perhaps it just doesn't appeal to him as much as being able to be back in the NFL and have more of a focused job task day in and day out.
Pat, there's a lot of potential with this organization when you look around the NFL. I mean, the Bears don't and haven't, and I'm not blaming Ted, but I mean, you know him very well. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the potential for the franchise moving forward, especially with the new stadium?
Molly, it's huge. I mean, like you mentioned it there, Anthony. Does he want the job? What's the price going to be? We talked about it Friday with Zach Zaidman. What is he getting paid by the Big Ten? What are the Bears willing to pay him? You know, that's one question everybody has when they take a job, right? How much are you getting paid? If it's equal, is this his passion and his drive, what he wants to do to run the Bears franchise? And Molly, you're right. It's a huge opportunity. We got Arlington. You got all this stuff you can do. You can build this charter franchise into something grand. You could make it back to what it should be and what it could be here in Chicago. And I think it's a great opportunity for him. I hope he takes it. Just what you talked about there, Anthony, his resume is amazing. He sounds like a leader. He sounds like a football guy. Everybody talks about a football guy. He's got a background of running two organizations, in the Lions and the Vikings. I would love for him to take it, and I just think the opportunity for this organization, what other organization in the NFL right now has this opportunity? You've got a young quarterback. You've got the property out there in Arlington Heights. You've got the opportunity to run the charter franchise. I if he wants it, and that's his drive like you talked about, I think it's awesome. I hope he does take it.
And you know, frankly, and we got to get to a break, but I think that when you look at the situation itself, I think he's going to have success if he takes it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think there's so much sitting there. You want to look like a million. And I'm not saying he's not, you know, maybe overqualified or whatever, but he's going to succeed at this job, because this is a job that you could probably, I don't want to say double the value of the organization, but maybe double the value of the organization.
No, you're right. No, you're right. I mean, that's the opportunity here. I mean, they've done great things. So Ted Phillips did some things. He underachieved. Ted Phillips overall, he underachieved. But he got a new Hallis Hall built. He got the stadium built here originally, you know, back in 2002 or 2001 or whatever it was.
Right.
But now Kevin has a chance to take this even just, like you said, double that, which is amazing, which would be an awesome opportunity for him.
The on-the-field portion of it, you got the quarterback. In theory, if you got the quarterback, you're on the ground floor of that, and then all the financial ramifications of maybe building a stadium in Arlington Heights, you can have the financial end of it that you're on the ground floor of something huge.
We got Tim Twentyman joining us from Detroit, Lions.com. We're going to talk to him about this team and if they've broken through and what they've seen. You know, the interesting question for them is, do they have a quarterback or do they need to draft one? And we'll talk to Tim about that next. You're listening to the pregame show here on The Score.
I'd be surprised if he wasn't, I put it that way. I mean, I think when you look at what that franchise needs, what he would bring to the table, and again, all the cards aligning kind of for this to happen, I'd be surprised if it didn't happen at this point. You know, I'm not reporting that. That's my personal opinion, but I just don't think it gets to this point without him ultimately, you know, getting that job.
We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Oh, welcome back to the pregame show. And we should let you know the pregame is presented by Bet Rivers, the official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download that Bet Rivers app today. And that was the voice of Matt Fortuna. He's with The Athletic. He was on with Dan and Lawrence earlier in the week. And it's interesting to hear, you know, kind of everyone's take on this. My take on it, is if I'm Kevin Warren, and I've said this, I'd be interviewing George and company as much as they'd be interviewing me, right? I'm just saying, you got a good job, you got things going well, and you're right about him maybe wanting to get back in the league, but Pat, this is a different group. I mean, you only we're with the organization, but I'm sure you have friends around the league, and you've talked about it, and I've talked about it with many a player. This is a different deal in Chicago than elsewhere. So I would want to know that I had the kind of power to do what I needed to do. I'm not saying that they would put up any kind of fight on anything you do, but this is just a different type. You know, the McCaskies, for whatever you want to say about them, their money is in football. Mm-hmm. They do not have outside business ventures that are supplying them the capital to work the football. This is their kind of baby, and there's very little that you'd see outside of this. So you'd have to have the commitment from them and the understanding. You know, we talked about how great the job could be, but it also could be, you could wind up in a position where, oh boy, this is not the way things were elsewhere that I have been. This is a different animal.
Right, but he all right, he's been with the Lions, right? And they've been a kind of a struggling organization. My thing is, you're right. You got to interview the McCaskies and the Bears organization as much as you get interviewed, because there has to be a lot of questions. But it's been so bad for the last decade, he might have the opportunity to really run the entire building. You know what I mean? He might have the opportunity that George is like, all right, I have not done well enough, and George has said that, listen, you are in charge. All right, I'm the boss, but you're in charge. You know what I mean? That it's just – so I think he will – if he is going to interview or has interviewed, he knows how to ask the right questions to what he wants answered to make sure that this is the job for him. And I hope it works out for him. It just, his resume and what you talked about, Anthony, sounds like he's the perfect person. But I think he's been around enough, been with two organizations that are kind of different, with with the Vikings and the Lions, and two different kind of ownership people, that he knows the right questions to ask. And it is an opportunity that, you know, if he does get to truly run this organization, that would be a lot of fun. If George kind of steps away and says, listen, I'm not good enough at what I'm doing right now. You can tell me how to do this. You've been at other places. You've run the Big Ten. Let's go. You're in charge. I think it would be kind of interesting to see what he could do with this organization.
It feels like this will largely come down to this decision. And who is Kevin Warren employed by moving forward here essentially will come down to what's he driven by. Mm-hmm. You know, like what motivates him for this next phase? He's still in his 50s right now, so he's still got a lot of time to pursue a variety of different career ventures. But he's already, you know, he's already achieved being at the top of the food chain in the athletic world. He is by many accounts, he has now become very quickly certainly one of the most powerful individuals in sports as the commissioner of the Big Ten, because his decisions sway and shift and alter the intercollegiate athletic landscape because of the position he's in and running the Big Ten and the success he's begun to have in putting deals in place, putting monumental contracts in place for the Big Ten. So if he's motivated by continuing to do that now, you know, like, you know, talking to Zach on Friday, one of his cases was, well, essentially like, what more can he do when you look at the deals he's put in place for the Big Ten here? Like, maybe he's maxed that out. I don't necessarily think that's the case because the, you know, the college sports landscape is going to continue to shift and, you know, there's going to be more deals to put in place for the Big Ten. There's going to be new dealings with student athletes and how compensation works. There's always challenges when you're in a gig like that, but is he perhaps motivated by, like some people say, to perhaps, like even when he was still with the Vikings, before he's made all this news with the Big Ten the last couple of years, while he was in Minnesota and a lot of folks outside of Minnesota, outside the NFL, didn't know a lot about Kevin Warren, he was rumored to potentially be the man who would one day replace Roger Goodell back then. And now we've seen all these stories that have been there, all these deals that have been made in the last few years since then. So is he motivated by perhaps being back in a position to be able to be the NFL commissioner one day when Roger Goodell steps aside? Or to the point I mentioned earlier, quality of life is huge. Like, yeah. You know, for me, from my perspective, we all view the job landscape and what appeals to us differently. Quality of life is a really big deal. Now, the money's got to be right. To Patrick's point, you know, I mean, the Bears got to say, hey, we're going to pay you somewhere in the realm, or if not, at least matching what you were making as Big Ten commissioner here. But being the president of an NFL franchise, that's still, it's got a lot on your plate. You're still going to have some sleepless nights, there's no doubt. But there's not the variety of headaches that would come from both the academic end of being a conference commissioner and the athletic end of it and all these other outside entities that you were constantly having to navigate both in men's sports and women's sports and all the other things are going to be, you know, shifting and reshaping under your feet within that. So if he feels like, you know what, just being back in the league is just more appealing than having to deal with all this student athlete stuff and all the different, you know, welfare issues that are going on there and how do you take care of them and how do you let other folks step in and take care of them? And, you know, there's just a lot that's already going on that will continue to be altered in intercollegiate athletics. And there's a chance he's just like, you know what, I'm kind of done dealing with that. But your point, Molly, I think is an excellent one about interviewing the McCaskies as well to know what he's really going to be dealing with if he does start running the Bears.
Yeah, and I think you look at Ted Phillips and you look at his rise, right? We don't have time to go through all the all the kind of soap opera that went on here, but the fact of the matter is that Ted was the team controller and he basically was working for Dave Wannstedt at one point. I mean, the coach, the GM, whatever role you want to put in. And then Ted, one of three vice presidents, when Michael McCaskey, the late Michael McCaskey, God rest his soul, when he kind of botched up the hiring of Dave McGinnis, and then Dave walked away and wouldn't take the job, they had to turn then to Dick Geron. And at that point, they had Michael become the Ed left again. God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. Left his job as the CEO. He became the CEO emeritus. Michael became the CEO, and they had Ted come in as the president. And it was an arbitrary decision, frankly, at the time. There were three vice presidents. He was the one that they chose. That's all fine and well. And he did a great job, as Patrick mentioned, of getting that building up and running. You know, for whatever reason, Michael didn't get along with the old Mayor Daley, and they were kind of banging heads and never got that building built. And then in a year, all of a sudden, Soldier Field is up and they're making money. Now, the minute it opened, it was kind of antiquated. There's other issues involved, but they did get it up. My point is simply, in my opinion, Ted believed that his job was to protect the family. Mm-hmm. And he really seemed to operate with that in mind and try to make sure that he was kind of the bodyguard of the McCaskies, for lack of a better term. And I don't believe this is what the job is anymore. I think that the job
is certainly not
has
what
changed.
It should be, right?
No, 100%.
Maybe never
100%.
Should have. Maybe never should have. Pat, you know him. Obviously, Ted was omnipresent. It's not just a, you know, the more the argument was that Ted was building the building while Jerry Angelo was putting together the team that you guys went to the Super Bowl with. Mm-hmm. And then once Ted finished with the building, he wanted to get into the football. And once that happened, that's when things kind of went awry.
It did.
No offense to anyone.
No,
but
it did.
You were there. You
I mean, the record speaks for itself, right? Ted's record's not good enough. Obviously, I've known Ted for a long time, friends with him, hug him when I see him, all that kind of stuff. But if you were to evaluate him like I was a football player, it wasn't good enough. We didn't win enough with the Bears organization. He made bad hires in GMs and coaches, head coaches after when I was there and afterwards. So it's, you know, he didn't do a good enough job football-wise. The other thing is the NFL was just skyrocketing, right? It was just, I think it was easy to make money. Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft came in. They changed the NFL, and it was just, I think, I hate saying this, and I say it every now and then, I think I could have run the Bears and still made money for this organization because the entire NFL was making money. Even the Bengals were making money when they weren't trying to make money. So I just think that the job, I'm not saying it was easy, but it was there for him to be successful just because the NFL was taking off. But he did an okay job, like I said, with the stadium, what he's done, him and Ryan Pace, what they did with Hallis Hall now, it's one of the top probably four or five facilities that the guys get to practice at. So that's a great job he's done there. But again, I think the NFL money was just kind of coming in with all the TV contracts being you know, just there was just money to be made. And I don't think his job, I hate saying this, it's hard. It was a hard job, but it was easier with all the other owners helping him out and helping all the other organizations out.
And I think in this next phase for the Bears, it'll be important for whomever ends up stepping in after Ted Phillips to be in a position where they can modernize the franchise. You know, it was one concern I had with who the next GM hire was going to be. Is this someone who can help modernize the infrastructure in a way that allows people to develop in a way that we haven't seen? We haven't seen coaches get better in their time, season over season, as they've been coaching the Bears, and we don't see the development of the talent that they draft. Or if they, you know, sign a young football player, are they getting better in the time that they're actually with the Bears and practicing and meeting at Hallis Hall? Then that hasn't seemed to work out for whatever reason. There are franchises around the NFL that do seem like they consistently develop individuals. The head coach can have sustained success. The assistants on that head coach's staff get other opportunities, and they go on to bring their greatness elsewhere. That hasn't been the resume of the Bears over the past decade plus. The people who are here in Chicago, people who are working at Hallis Hall, whether it's players or executives, where you say, you know what, all right, that's an individual that learned something on the job here and the task at hand. They got better at it in a way that turned into sustained success for the team, for them as individuals. So that a lot of that is, how does your infrastructure now allow people to improve? Now nurture that improvement, that development. And that's where, even though, you know, I wouldn't necessarily term Kevin Warren as like quote unquote football guy. He's been in the NFL for years and in athletics for years, but he's not going to like get on the grease board and say, well, you know, hey, here's what I think Justin Fields should be doing instead or something like that. But he has overseen athletics. He has overseen coaches. He has been a chief executive at the highest of levels for years now. And to be able to bring his gravitas into the room, perhaps that is something that gives the Bears an additional buffer that could be very useful. Because if he gets into the room with the McCaskies and says, all right, so I've gotten a sense for how you guys operate, how you run things, but if you want me to step into this and bring the Chicago Bears into the future, into this oncoming NFL future, then here's what I need. And part of that might be, I need a wall up. I'm going to report to you quarterly and tell you how things are rolling, but I don't necessarily need you, you know, in my office giving me your opinion on this or that. Or frankly, if you do, I need you to recognize that the buck stops with me. So, you know, you wonder how those discussions have mm-hmm. gone, how they would continue to go, and how much, to your point, Mully, Kevin Warren is in a position to get into the weeds on how things operate and how he could be in a position to step in and try to improve the inner workings at Hallis.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's a great job because I think there's only one way to go. And for the reasons we talk about, the NFL, you know, the Bears have not tapped into owning their own state. You know, the value of the franchise improved the day they bid on that land, right?
Yeah.
And if they can actually get it done and build the building, right? And I'm not saying that I doubt that, but that's a That is a monumental task. If they can get it done, they're set for years and years. And you know, we know that when Soldier Field, the smallest building in the NFL, the minute the thing opened, the Bears were they didn't know what to do with all the money that was coming in, but that did not sustain, and that did not mean that they just had been in a terrible position before. This would be ownership of, I mean, this potentially would mean generational wealth, and would you know, I know the Bears have something in place that this generation of McCaskies will be able to own the team. I don't know with all the heirs, I don't know how that works moving forward, and I think that's one of the problems they're going to have to deal with is what happens after this generation, the youngest of whom is Brian, who has got to be in his early 60s, right? So I think that you look at it and you wonder to yourself, like, what does the future hold for McCaskey ownership? But at the same point, even if you eventually have to sell, you're talking about an entity that would be worth, I mean, billions more than it's listed as being worth right now because of the fact of how it began and what it represents and the impact of Chicago and how many people are connected to it. So it's a job that is it's a great job if you're allowed to do it.
If you're allowed to do it, right. And there's examples not only around the NFL where Jerry Jones takes, you know, Cowboys Stadium out to Arlington, Texas, and what that happened. But even just here in the city, what the Ricketts family did without having to move Wrigley Field, but in buying up Wrigleyville and turning that into a cash cow for them and putting that investment in, and now that investment is paying tenfold for them. And, you know, you would imagine that the Bears have been able to sit back and look at all those examples, both within their league and within their city, for what the financial ramifications could be of a move to Arlington Heights, and how, if they do it correctly, that they can maximize their own pockets, their own wealth, and in theory, hopefully for Bears fans, their success on the field that could be associated with it too.
All right, we've got to get back to the football game. This is fun, though, and I think that this is as important.
Molly, this offseason is going to be amazing, right? With the draft and this talk, it's going to be great. Yeah.
Yeah, we're expecting like a new president, a new direction, an entirely new team to a large extent, right?
Yep.
I mean, when we say they could add 20 players, we're not talking about adding 20 guys. You know, we're talking about blue players. We're talking about purples. You know, go out, get the best of the best. You know, when you got $110 million, it sounds like a lot of money, but you know, that's going to be eaten pretty quickly. Hopefully they find players on the free agent market. Again, you're paying for that. You are paying premium prices when you're shopping in free agency. But the draft picks, they can maximize that, get young talent, hopefully they have some young players that are going to move forward here with them and improve and all the things you talk about with player development, which, you know, I got to tell you, I want to see more of it, frankly, because I've seen a lot of guys play this year, but I'm not sure how many of them are keepers. Maybe we should get into that a little bit about who we want to see play and what it means, various things they've said, even this week. You know, when you're talking about moving your three technique to defensive end, you're saying we need a new three technique. And if this guy's sticking around, he's going to have to play some defensive end and play all over the line. But we'll get into that. There's a lot of fun stuff to talk about. It is the pregame show on The Score.
I mean, you know, when you're at where our roster is right now, at the end of the year, you know, we got a lot of guys on IR, so the combinations really aren't that many that you can do, but certainly we're going to move guys around a little bit, you know, potentially offensive line, defensive line, but it's not any big shift. You know, for example, we might look at, you know, Justin Jones might be a three technique, we might put him out at end, you know, so that's an example that we might have. We've talked about doing that before, so just a couple things like that.
We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Welcome back to the pregame and happy new year to everyone. And if you're feeling a little bit rough this morning, people sometimes do, I'm told. this time of year, you got to remember the new Zing Zang Bloody Mary canned cocktails, premium vodka already in the can, always ready, perfect for your game day tailgates, and please zing zang responsibly. I would say, listening to Matt Eberflus there, they apparently have been talking about Justin Jones to defensive end. That's interesting to me because I think that he's been better than maybe some of the players they've lined up on the defensive line. There hasn't been great abundance of production on the defensive line. In fact, it's an embarrassment. They got 8.5 sacks total from defensive linemen this year. That's not accounting the fact that I think Roquan is still the second leading sacker on this team, and he's been gone since what, week 7 was the last game he played in, something like that, game 7. It's just crazy to think about the lack of production there. So you move him outside, you try a young guy inside. They're going to be shopping for a 3 technique. We know that from Matt Eberflus. You know, he talked about that position being the engine of the defense and how you have to have that guy. And who knows? Maybe they get lucky. Maybe Indy gets rid of a player that ends up coming here. I don't know how the offseason will play, but Justin Jones moving at this point of the year to a defensive end position seems like a trial for next year. Not at the end, but just at the ability to move him around a little bit and see what value he has to you, because you're probably replacing him in the offseason.
I think it's a part of why my anticipation has been that even though Justin Jones, at times, I'd say for the bulk of the season, has been their best defensive lineman, at least their most productive, not only statistically, but who's affected the pocket more frequently mm-hmm. than anyone else, I think that's been Justin Jones. But that being said, because he plays the premier position up front, it struck me as being maybe least likely that he would be one to return next year because it is the premier position up front of the defensive line. And so you need an upgrade at 3 technique because that guy's got to be a bona fide shop wrecker for this defense to truly be great. And Justin Jones as a 3 technique is not a bona fide shop wrecker. But that doesn't mean he can't have a role within your defensive front. And I think, you know, to your point, Mully, not only about, you know, him not being the 3 technique of the future for the Bears, and I don't think they necessarily signed him. They signed Larry Ogunjobi, hoping he could at least be a stopgap 3 technique. And, you know, he's never been a bona fide shop wrecker either, but he was at least a guy they were willing to pay some significant money to. Then you sort of downgrade and, you know, for lack of a better term, settle for Justin Jones because the Ogunjobi deal doesn't work out since he failed the physical. So I don't think, you know, Ryan Poles or anyone else thought that signing Justin Jones was going to be necessarily their long-term answer at 3 tech. But he is a guy with some skill. He's a guy with some penetration ability. So to try him out at end, he's played a few snaps at end in certain packages earlier in the season here. And so over the last couple of weeks, if they get a more extended look at that, now at least you know, and you get the opportunity to see, you know, not only whether or not there's anyone else in house, whether that's an Armon Watts or something like that, to say, all right, can you be a rotational piece inside also? But can Justin Jones be someone, if Al-Qadim Muhammad is not here as maybe your best run defender as a defensive end, certainly not a quality pass rusher, none of them have proven themselves to be, but can Justin Jones just slide out and be maybe a first and second down rotational defensive end for you, hit some blocks, and then when you get into your sub packages, now other people are going to come onto the field to rush the quarterback on the edge. You have the chance to just try some stuff out here, Patrick, so it feels like they're just giving an audition everywhere.
Well, unfortunately, I've been in this situation numerous times when you're out of the playoff hunt and you got practice squad guys coming up, guys go on IR that are injured but not injured. Maybe Jalen Jones could have played if they're going to the playoffs, but hey, put him on IR because it's, you know, he's got to take care of his finger. It happens. You understand it. This, to me, and I'm looking at Justin Jones's contract, this is kind of like a tryout for next year. The versatility, like you're talking about, the versatility of him. Can he be a rotational guy next year, not be your star 3 technique, but be that wave guy, you know, the second wave that comes in the D-line? Can he play anywhere? Can guys get injured? Can I put him in at DN next year if that guy's injured, but he can also play 3 technique as a backup and come in and spell the starter? But this is just the way the NFL is at this time of year. I have no problem. I like the fact they're openly talking about, I'm going to play guys. We're just going to move them around. We're going to figure this thing out. It's almost like a second preseason to evaluate these guys for next year, and I got no problem with it.
Yeah, I think it's smart business policy. I mean, you know, if the guy's not good enough to be your number one, then you better know if he's good enough to be in a wave of players that you use. And, you know, the contract isn't formidable. You can handle whatever the money is. It's there's a couple of points to be made about this offseason that I think are really interesting. One would be I thought it was a shocking statistic that the Bears have played 18 rookies and that 30% of your defensive snaps have gone to a rookie this year. Think about that. They did not have a first-round draft pick. Now, they had a couple of second-round picks, and those guys have played the whole year. But when 30% of your snaps are going to rookies and you never had a number one pick, that means you've been filling in a lot of positions with a lot of guys that no one ever heard of, that came later in the draft, or you found on a practice squad, or you thought this is a good investment in an undrafted free agent. That's a lot of snaps. And I'm not saying that you can't succeed by doing it that way, but hopefully that if you're using guys that in that fashion, hopefully you found someone who's good enough to maintain and keep, but you're also looking to replace a lot of that. You don't want you want a little bit of somebody that has a little gravitas to them and a little bit of a background and a history that makes you believe they're going to succeed and not just try to coach up every position.
Well, like what Jack Sanborn has been able to do for himself in playing himself into a role where you say, okay, if you know he's not an elite middle linebacker, at least not yet. Don't want to necessarily put a ceiling on guys, but is he someone who is productive enough week in and week out as a starter that you say, if there's anywhere that we don't necessarily have to, can we prioritize other spots, then perhaps inside linebacker is one of those spots with a healthy Jack Sanborn. And I think on the back end here, Jalen Jones has really impressed me week over week, man. I mean, he's kind of turned into the Jack Sanborn of the secondary with the comfort he shows, the aggression he shows on the back end. He looks like he belongs. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing for an undrafted rookie free agent at that position at corner. And in the way that Allen Williams has been deploying the secondary lately, a lot more man coverage here in recent weeks, partly because of youth and inexperience. We've seen some blitz, certainly on the back end also. They went away from it for a couple of weeks where Brisker and Gordon were out. Now that you got Brisker and Gordon back into the lineup, we've seen a couple of games now them ramp the blitz package back up as they had begun to do previously. But Jalen Jones has really impressed me.
Yeah, and I think what they're doing too is they're developing depth for the future. These guys are going to be on rookie contracts. You know, they have all this money to maybe go find a veteran that can fill in and be a starter and a star, and you're hoping some of these young guys become stars, but I think they're depth. I think that's what you're developing. And I think if you take this roster right now, and we've talked about this before, and you make, like, the O-line right now is not good enough. If you made them backups to what could be other starters that came in, if you took the DBs, made those guys, besides the young guys that are playing now, not the guys that are on IR and injured, if you take those guys and make them backups, then it's a pretty good roster. If you make these guys backups, then they're doing a nice job of developing this roster for the future.
Absolutely. All right, we're gonna head out to Detroit. We're gonna bring in Tim Twentyman. We're gonna talk about what we're looking at with this Detroit team and the excitement that they built up at some point. Is the quarterback a keeper? How good is this team? How far ahead of the Bears are they really? It was a 1-point loss at home to them, but they did win the game. So we'll find out how much better they've been playing. Dan Campbell, always a fun guy to talk about. So we'll do that with Tim Twentyman next. It is the pregame show on The Score.